especially fun to follow Leslie. We went to law school together, and we won't say how long ago, way back in the 90s. And it's also fun just to be part of this panel with other legal topics, and alcohol often kind of gets left out of the public health picture, and as evidenced by it being left out of the title of the session, but it's okay. I'm still glad I'm here. And it was just also interesting listening to you talk about tobacco, and because there's so many similarities to alcohol. And I just have to say, I was amused you're complaining about the tax in California not being raised since 1999. So in alcohol, we haven't had a tax raised since 1990 in California, and in some states around the country, there has not been an alcohol tax increase for decades. I think the record may be the Eisenhower administration, I forget, but yeah. So if you think it's bad in your field, we can always beat you. So what I'm going to do for you today is give you a story of this success. So it is rare that we have a success, sadly enough, in the alcohol field, even in public health in general, when we're going up against such powerful industries such as tobacco, alcohol, and food. And those are sort of the trifecta of diseases caused by corporations. And so I thought it would be fun, since it's so rare, to really tell you how we got this victory and kind of give you some lessons learned at the end. And I want to give a shout out. So as Lainey mentioned, I did this work. I was with Marin Institute, now called Alcohol Justice. And so all of this story is related to my work there. And in the back of the room is Sarah Mart, who's the current research director. And if you all have questions or want to follow up on, you know, the information that I'm talking about, and there's some great resources that, of course, I helped develop on the Alcohol Justice website at alcoholjustice.org. So just to give you some background here, what are we talking about? What the hell are alcoholic energy drinks? So the alcohol industry, not content to just fill kids up with one drug, thought, well, let's combine it with another. And it actually came out of an idea really promoted by Red Bull. If you go to any bars, you might notice that Red Bull is heavily promoted in bars. So again, Red Bull, not content to just fill you with caffeine, decided, well, let's promote this idea of combining Red Bull and vodka. And this Red Bull came on the market, I think, big in the late 90s, so maybe early 2000s, Red Bull and vodka got big. I'm not sure because, you know, I don't drink this stuff. All I know is in doing this research, that was sort of where the idea came about. And then the alcohol industry sort of jumped onto this concept and said, well, we could do this ourselves and combine the two drugs in one bottle. So the first example of this, or one of the first examples, were these ridiculous products called Spikes. And they were put out by Anheuser-Busch, biggest beer company. And if you think they look like nail polish, you're right, and that's what we used to say. The products are luckily no longer on the market because we engaged in a massive media campaign along with other advocacy groups. There were these little 3-ounce bottles. They contained caffeine and other stimulants, which was kind of silly, but the idea was that you pour them into your beer or some other alcoholic beverage, I guess, for the flavorings. And they were so child-friendly, it was ridiculous. And I mean, sometimes companies just go over the line so much that it's easy to kind of slap them back. And this one, we won, I think, probably within a year or so of them being on the market. And that was sort of the early stages. So this would be, I started in 2007, so that was the first fight with Spikes. And then came along these other products. So Sparks became the leading brand of these caffeinated alcoholic beverages. And this was owned by Miller Coors. And this is one of their, you know, lovely images. And then, again, Anheuser-Busch came out with a sort of a beer extension called Bud Extra. And they had a whole series of ads that had this theme of, you know, making fun of being older and sort of staying up as long as you can, obviously promoting the idea of caffeine making you more alert. And so you can go home when you're married. They had one something like you can sleep when you're 30 and all this kind of marketing. And all the while, by the way, it's get into the regulation, who's regulating what, but the federal government said that that these products were not to promote caffeine as a stimulant. In other words, they weren't supposed to give the idea that if you drink these products, you will stay awake longer. Because if you think about it, it's a pretty stupid idea, right? The last thing we want is for people who are drunk to actually stay awake indefinitely and, you know, do more mayhem and obviously to themselves and others. So anyway, I could just go on and on about these stupid products, but I don't have that much time to rant and rave. So what we did about it, 2007, I came to my institute. The concept was actually brought to me by a colleague, Jim Mosier, who, if you don't know, is the nation's leading alcohol lawyer, taught me everything I know in this field. And we teamed up to write this report. No one had done anything up to this point. There was really nothing out there in the literature about these products. And so we realized we needed to fill that void in order to kind of get the word out there about this crazy thing. And so that's what we did. We put out this report, Alcohol, Energy Drinks, and Youth, the Dangerous Mix. And this image is to show how similar, there were many problems with these products. One was how similar they were. So this was the Rockstar line, which comes in a number of soft drink brands. And that's what three of these are, and we would play these games where we would line up all the energy soft drinks, right, the caffeinated monster drinks and so forth, line them up and stick an alcoholic one in the middle and challenge you to figure out which one it was. Anybody? Okay, Rockstar 21. So, which, you know, hint, hint, haha, you can drink when you're 21. So it was not a, you know, great way to get teens' attention. And this was true with every brand. They all looked like soft drinks. So that was just part of what we were pointing out. But what we did with that report is show how the marketing strategies were specifically aimed at youth because they utilized social marketing. Most adults had no idea what these products were. If they saw them in their own refrigerators, they would think they were soda. And of course, these drinks were heavily sweetened and masked the flavor of alcohol. Okay, so the next thing that happened was we got a champion in the form of a medical doctor. So Mary Claire O'Brien, after our report, was already doing some research and came out, in fact, presented her research at APHA in 07 on the medical, the horrendous health effects of this. And she proved with a survey of college students that indeed students who drank these products had more injuries, showed up in hospitals more often. Every risk factor that you would normally associate with alcohol alone was increased by combining it with caffeine. So that was a really critical step in the development of this issue and, of course, getting this information out. I did conferences all over the country, and we handed out probably over 1,000. I know we had to do several printings of the report. People were asking for copies of the report all over the country. We did a lot of dissemination of this information. So I want to talk about the law, because that's why we're here. And I can't emphasize enough the importance of the state attorneys general. So what is an attorney general? It's not a military guy or anything like that. It's basically the state's highest law enforcement officer, if you will. So it's the state's lawyer. And they have various interests, and most of them are political animals. The common saying is that the AG is running for governor, which is true in a lot of places, but they happen to have specialized interests. So there is a committee on youth alcohol, and there were a few particular assistant attorneys general who got interested in this issue. Okay, and so they started to investigate MillerCoors, which owns Sparks, and Anheuser-Busch, which owns this other product called Tilt. It's a very similar type of product, just tastes like soda and full of caffeine and other stimulants. Okay, so the attorneys general and then Center for Science and the Public Interest, which is an advocacy group based in Washington, D.C., both started investigating these companies, threatening litigation. Okay, so we're doing our thing, getting the word out, you know, educating people, and then you had this legal threat happening, and it was incredibly powerful because state AGs are also very good at getting media attention, right? So, you know, state of Connecticut, for example, our California Assistant Attorney General was involved, Maryland extremely. So there was like a handful of real leaders. And so what they would do is put out warning letters to the company all the while they were investigating, and they're very secretive. That's the only thing that's kind of frustrating about working with them. The information flows one way. We give them all the information, but they don't give us much back. But then when they finally act, it's really amazing. And so they started sending threatening letters, and then they finally came to an actual legal settlement with both Anheuser-Busch and MillerCoors. And this is over a period of time. So it didn't just happen overnight, but over a couple of years of this investigation, they wound up getting Anheuser-Busch and InBev, a huge, massive company, and MillerCoors, the other huge, massive beer company, to agree to stop making these products with caffeine and other stimulants. Huge victory. This was, you know, I lost track, maybe 2008. Yeah, I think sometime in 2008. So we thought, wow, great, Sparks is off. And Sparks was the one we were really worried about. They were the most popular brand. They were the most virally marketed, et cetera. So we thought, okay, we won. Well, not so fast. Because turned out other companies figured, wow, now there's a void in the market. Well, let's just slip right in. And that's exactly what happened. So these big companies got out of the market. But then we had these new products, one of them called Four Loko, a brand owned by Fusion Projects, a small company. These are just individual companies now, independent companies. Another brand called Juice, obviously just as disgusting, even worse in their marketing strategies. And then the products got bigger. So it was like, as soon as we thought we had one victory, we had another even worse problem on our hands with these smaller companies, but we're also getting very wide distribution. So what happened then, the effort kind of shifted to the states, and all this is actually kind of happening in parallel. So we decided at Marin Institute somewhere in there, we needed to write model legislation to help states ban the products. And alcohol is somewhat unique in that there is very strong authority to regulate at the state level. It's actually given authority given to the states through the 21st Amendment, which repealed prohibition. So after we realized that quite didn't work, the idea was to allow states to do their thing in regulating alcohol. So we really pushed this idea that states should ban these products. And there were also other efforts to look at state ABCs, the Alcohol and Beverage Control Agencies, to do their thing. Because, as Leslie mentioned, there are some states that regulate alcohol completely at the state level. In other words, they're control states, and they have more authority to regulate than the licensed states. But according to that, the point is, all of this wasn't enough because, I mean, industry was right there lobbying, of course, and I actually went to testify in Washington State for a bill there. It didn't even get out of committee because the industry members were lined up and just intimidated the politicians, even though we had this crazy product. So then all this time, so now the pressure is building, and in our report we had made recommendations at every level, but we were particularly harping on the fact that we needed federal action, because we didn't really want to have to go state by state. We needed the federal government to act to get these products off the market once and for all. And so just to give you a quick overview of the insanity of alcohol regulation at the federal level. So you would think, I don't know, maybe alcohol would be regulated by a public health agency or, you know, FDA. Well, no, in fact, it's regulated by the Department of Treasury, the taxing agency, in fact, and which pretty much explains everything about what's wrong with alcohol policy right there, because you have people who know nothing about health. They're basically revenue collectors approving alcohol products. So how did these products even get on the market? The TTB, Tax and Trade Bureau of Department of Treasury, has to approve every label that comes their way, and they just sort of rubber stamp things. And they thought, oh, caffeine alcohol, no problem. Okay, go on your merry way. So that's how we got into this mess in the first place. So they were useless. The Federal Trade Commission regulates advertising, and so we were trying to get them to make a statement about the advertising of these products. The Food and Drug Administration generally does not regulate alcohol, with one exception. They have jurisdiction over additives. And so Jim Mosher and I realized when we were writing our report there was an opportunity here, because caffeine was essentially an additive in these products. But the trick is that FDA didn't have to give sort of pre-approval. The products just got on the market without FDA ever having reviewed the concept. And so we recommended that FDA review the concept and say, you know what, maybe this isn't such a good idea to have caffeine as an additive. And so that's kind of where the, I don't want to say where the whole thing shifted, but we always knew that that was sort of, that would be our place where we could possibly get a win just, you know, legally. And the AGs, the Attorneys General, knew that too. And so what we kind of learned was behind the scenes, the AGs, while they were, you know, continuing their investigations of these other companies that had come on to take the place of MillerCoors and Anheuser-Busch, they were there meeting with FDA to get them to take action. But they hadn't yet until tragedy struck. And oh, hang on, I want to just back up a second before we get to the tragedy. So, because I want to make sure I got the timeline right. So it actually was in November 2009, FDA finally came out and said, we are going to investigate. Okay, they didn't make a ruling yet. They just said, okay, we get it. We need to look into this. And that was like a big thing right there. And they actually said they were giving the companies 30 days to prove to them that caffeine was a safe additive in alcohol. And we thought, well, there's no way they can do that at all, and they certainly can't do it in 30 days. And so we figured, okay, you know, this is going to be a slam dunk, I mean, knowing that there'd be a delay. Well, then there was, like, unbelievable delay, months and months of delay, companies saying they needed more time, they were, you know, just, you know, making up documents to flood FDA. We don't know what the heck they could have been doing to prove that caffeine was a safe additive, but there was delay, and it was extremely frustrating. And that's when tragedy struck. So, and of course, these are just the reports. I mean, I'm sure there was many more like this going on. But so in, it was beginning of fall 10 that we had this particular tragedy at Central Washington State University, where 9 college students showed up in emergency rooms because they had a party with Four Loko. A similar story unfolded at a university in New Jersey. So now all of a sudden this became national news. I mean, I was on the CBS Early Show, and the senators were, you know, getting outraged, and it became a big deal. And it was, I can't tell you how frustrating this was, because my thing was, I don't want to be on national TV, I just want this goddamn thing taken care of. And it really was upsetting. It was also ironic that this tragedy happened in Washington State. And I made the point, well, gee, you know what, we tried to get a bill passed last year, but the lobbyists kept that from happening, and now, you know, your kids are in the emergency room. See how that goes. So, you can tell I got angry with this thing. Anyway, the point is, that's really when the pressure built, and we finally got FDA to act. And so they, in November of 2010, came out with this ruling, essentially, that said, indeed, caffeine is not so safe in alcohol, and essentially declared the products illegal. So the legal term is an adulterant. So if an additive is unsafe or not approved, then it is an adulterant. And if a food product, in this case an alcoholic beverage, contains an adulterant, that means that the product is not legal for sale. And so that was like, you know, thank you God, and thank you FDA, and thank you AGs, everyone who had been putting pressure on this agency. FTC, Regulates Advertising, came out also with a very strong statement saying that the products were being illegally, deceptively marketed. So that was another big victory. TTB was still kind of asleep at the wheel. But now we have another problem on our hands, because, you know, it's never over with any of these companies, because, you know, they're very clever. So the new products, the new problem is products that no longer have caffeine, but are these, so I said how they had grown up from the 16 ounces to the 24 ounce cans up to 12% alcohol. So now that's what we have, but without the caffeine. This is a new product on the market called Blast. It's manufactured by Pabst Brewing Company, and they just thought, well, okay, we can't make a product with caffeine, but we really like this idea that was invented by these other companies, Four Loko and Juice, which, by the way, those brands also still on the market without caffeine, but in these supersized containers. So that's the new campaign that we're all working on, and Alcohol Justice, and again, definitely get with Sarah about more information on this campaign and what we've done for this, is draft other model legislation to try to bring these products back down to size, to a regular serving size. So that's kind of where things stand, and that's just to show you in one can of Four Loko what the equivalent of the alcohol is. And it's basically four and a half servings of alcohol. So if you look at a regular serving of alcohol, it's the equivalent of four and a half servings, right? I have that right, 4.7, I think. Yeah, it's insane. And of course, they're served as, I mean, they're meant to be single serve, so they're not. So that gets to what's going on now, which is just a few weeks ago, the Federal Trade Commission announced this proposed consent order. So apparently they had been investigating Fusion Projects, which is the company that makes Four Loko. And they have put out this proposed consent order, a settlement with the company that they think is apparently a good idea for public health, which is to slap a little label on the can that says, this can has as much alcohol as four regular beers. Okay. Well, we in public health or in the alcohol field are not happy with this solution at all. The other thing is that something about a resealable can, because, you know, kids are going to buy it and then put the cap back on and put it in mom's refrigerator. We don't think so. So now there's been an effort led by Alcohol Justice and myself and a few others to try to get people to submit comments to tell FTC this is a stupid idea. And this is also, from a legal perspective, a good example of the law kind of possibly undermining states, the federal law undermining the states. It wouldn't preempt states, but it would undermine politically the ability of states to go further. So quickly, lessons learned, because I'm running out of time. So the lessons learned are to get familiar with the state Attorney General office, especially find a friendly assistant AG. I can't emphasize this enough. If your Attorney General happens to be a Republican, that may not even be a barrier. Democrats tend to be friendlier, of course, but we've had Republicans also on this issue be helpful. Working with state legislatures, you're finding a champion in the state legislature. Regulators are key as well. Health professionals to champion cause. I mean, these are kind of cross-cutting issues, obviously, for whatever your issue. Media, of course, was critical in this. I can't tell how many times, and the media was very interested in this because it was such a dramatic issue. Working with the wide coalition, in our case, cops, doctors, faith groups, be persistent. I mean, there's just no issue that doesn't require persistence and patience and passion. And, of course, be prepared to do battle again because, like I said, these guys don't give up. They just keep coming back. So with that, I don't know how we are on time. Should we do questions now?
Or?
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.